You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb. I'm your host, Carrie Diamond. This season of Radio Cherry Bomb is presented by Le Cordon Bleu. Le Cordon Bleu, the legendary culinary school, has locations around the globe, from Paris to London to Ottawa. The schools have a wide array of programs available, from nine-month classical culinary training programs all the way to bachelor and master's degrees. Visit cordonbleu.edu for more. So we're in the middle of the Cherry Bomb Cookbook Tour, as most of you know. We've loved meeting so many of you on the road. I really appreciate that a lot of you have come up to me and told me that you listen to the show religiously. We've still got stops coming up in Pittsburgh, Philly, Boston, and Charleston. Be sure to check out cherrybomb.com for dates, details, and ticket links. We would love to see you in your town. Up next, we have our new feature, the Cookbook Call-In, where we take a deeper look at one of the recipes in the Cherry Bomb Cookbook. Here, I talk to Diana Yen, the founder of Jewels of New York, about her homemade fortune cookies. So we are very lucky we have Diana Yen on the line. She is the founder of Jewels of New York. Diana, thanks for calling in.
Hi, Carrie. Thanks for having me.
So can you tell us what Jewels of New York is all about?
Jewels of New York is my styling and food consulting studio. So we often do styling for photo shoots and consult on recipes. We're constantly testing recipes in the kitchen, and we had a real pleasure working on the cookbook with you guys.
Well, we absolutely love the recipe you gave us. It's for fortune cookies. Why did you decide to give us a fortune cookie recipe?
I wanted to submit a recipe that was something that would be fun to make with friends. And I really love the whole tradition of getting together, decorating, or making cookies together. It's a tradition I've always had, and I wanted to share in the book as well.
That sounds like so much fun. So, Diana, you gave us two different flavors, black sesame and matcha. Why did you pick those?
I like to have these cookies with tea, and I think that matcha has a really nice, subtle, earthy pairing with most teas. And with the black sesame, it gives a little bit of texture and a sort of a nutty flavor to the cookie. So they're both really fun flavors that we've tried in the studio.
And are these a little tastier than the average Chinese restaurant fortune cookie?
Yes. It's so much better when they're fresh. And a lot of times in the middle of the cookie, it'll have like a little bit of softness still, and then you get really crisp edges. So it's definitely a more elegant version of what you would find in a restaurant.
And how long does it take to make a batch of these? What sort of time investment are we looking at?
I say it's pretty quick. Making the batter only takes a few minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes. And then once you have the batter, it's more of the labor of forming them. So, you know, it might take you a minute for each cookie, something like that. So I would say it's pretty quick, but, you know, you could make an afternoon of it if you have friends over.
All right. Well, Diana, thank you. We're so thrilled to have your recipe. It was really nice talking to you.
Thank you so much, Carrie.
Hey, everybody. What follows next is an interview I taped recently with two sisters, Anna Francis Goss and Luciana Francis DaCrosta. Anna is the founder of Anna's Heirloom Kitchen, which looks to preserve family recipes via interviews with grandmothers around the country. We happen to have a feature on Anna, plus one of her family recipes, in the latest issue of Cherry Bomb. We're very excited about that. And Luciana is a real estate developer with Acadia Realty Trust, the company behind the new City Point Shopping Center in downtown Brooklyn, which happens to include the DeKalb Food Hall. Enjoy our conversation and be sure to follow our cookbook tour adventures on Instagram. Anna, Luciana, welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks.
It's so great to have you two here. How are you today?
We're good. We're excited to be here. It's always fun to hang out with my sister here in Brooklyn. I don't get here every day, but it's always fun to travel that BQE.
Yeah, where do you live again?
So I live in New Canaan, Connecticut.
Ah, that's right.
Yes, Luciana will be there soon someday.
And we're making you do double duty today. You are doing a photo shoot for the next issue of Cherry Bomb after this,
yes.
Which is why you look like Beyonce today,
yes.
Right?
Well, she looks like me today, actually. Just keep that clear. Yes.
But I was saying, I love your website because you're giving a lot of like Sophia Loren vibes on the website. So I was curious what you'd be rocking today.
Yeah. Well, there's the hair flip and then, you know, now we're doing the beach wave. You got to keep it fresh.
Always.
Don't forget the eyelashes.
Yes. And the eyelashes. Oh, yes.
Always got to give my secrets away.
I used to be a beauty editor, so I love to always, I go right to the makeup and the hair.
Yeah.
Do you always rock false eyelashes?
No.
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 She would not
with that. I was told to be camera ready today.
Yes.
So
yes.
I thought camera ready meant, you know, I called Bay. I said, you know, what do I need to do? I got some tips and I'm here now.
You didn't call Bay. You called me. And we may have texted back and forth for probably 2 hours last night. Do I get my makeup done? Do I not? I'm just like, get your makeup done.
Yeah. A lot of pictures of outfits text back and forth too. The whole family weighed in on the outfit. So.
So you two are the only siblings?
Yes.
It's all they needed.
Best in class.
That's all they needed. That's funny. I'm one of five, so I'm, in addition to being makeup and hair obsessed, I'm also really curious about sort of the birth order and how it makes you who you are and just what your relationship was like growing up. I am the oldest of five, and it's three girls and then two boys. And my sisters and I fought like cats and dogs mm-hmm. growing up.
Yep.
How about you two?
Yeah, that sounds, once she realized I was in charge, that set the stage. But before that, it was a little tough. No, I'm 4 years older. So my two girls are 2 years apart and they fight a lot. And we're 4 years apart and we fought a lot. So I don't really think the amount of years apart really makes any difference.
Yeah, but I feel like, I don't know, depends on who you ask. Because if you ask my sister, my mom, I was the fresh one because I was the younger
fresh
one.
Fresh meaning fresh Miss, face?
Oh, that's an Italian thing.
Oh,
she's
sorry.
Not going to understand what fresh
means. Oh, no, I know what fresh means, but like.
Misbehaved.
Misbehaved.
I had quite an opinion. And now that my sister, you know, I have a daughter, but she isn't old enough to understand. She's only 15 months. But the favorite thing in the family to do is to discuss all the, you know, fresh things that Tsitsi, because they call me Tsitsi, what I did when I was little. So
wait, Tsitsi?
Tsitsi. So in Italian, aunt is Zia, but it's like a little, like, I don't know,
cutesy little aunt, like
name.
Z-I-Z-I, Tsitsi, yeah. Tsitsi.
Yeah. Got it. Okay.
So that's what her girls call me. And so when I'm not around, because everybody but me lives in Connecticut, they have, you know, these fun times talking about all the things I did to drive my mom crazy.
Yeah.
My sister was perfect.
I was the good one.
You were.
I was.
So you weren't the rebellious older one.
No, I was the...
Setting a path for your
little
sister.
Setting the path, rule follower, early curfew, and then she used to mouth off. What can I say?
Yeah, but I still didn't get away with much.
Well, we know there are children listening today, so there's a no cursing rule.
The no curse zone.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's see how long she lasts.
So wait, you have a 15-month old daughter, but you have three kids.
I have three kids. I have a 10-year-old girl, Alessandra, 8-year-old girl, Veronica, and a 4-year-old boy named Dante.
Aw.
So they keep me very, very busy.
And yet she still finds time for a blowout.
Mm-hmm. There's always time for a blowout. Take that to the bank.
So who cooked in the family growing up?
Everybody. You know, my mom.
Mainly our mom.
Yeah, but Dad loves to cook, too. He certainly loves to eat.
Yeah.
But my mother actually, I don't know. I just find my mother, like, so interesting. So she grew up, you know, in basically a farm mountain town in southern Italy. Where, you know, she was one of six girls, and it was just, you know, it very traditional in the sense that everybody cooked, they farmed, any sort of meat that they ate was from animals that they raised. So my mother, you know, she just has a hand in the kitchen.
It was farm to table.
Definitely. Definitely, before it was cool. So then once my parents met, and, you know, they moved to the States. How old are you, Anna? Because Anna was born there.
So yes, I am an immigrant. I came here when I was 1 year old.
Yeah. Really cute passport pic.
Yeah.
Got to find it.
So my dad's an American. My dad is, like, second generation Italian.
Italian.
He was in Italy studying. Met my mom. Very romantic. They had me, and then they decided to come back here. So I can still be president. Please, no one worry.
She has
I'm a naturalized American citizen.
So. Thank goodness.
Thank you. Yeah. I know.
2020 is not that far away. So
I'm getting ready. Yeah, so we got here, and you know, we moved to Jersey first because that's where all Italians go. And, you know, you get baptized there into U.S. cultures, and then you can move out from there. So then we came to Rhode Island, which is where my dad was born and raised. So we grew up in Westerly, Rhode Island, which is where my dad is
my
from.
My brother has a beach house in Westerly.
Many people do.
I know Westerly.
Yeah, it's
small
a great,
world.
It's a great little beach town.
The photographer who's taking your pictures from Rhode Island. She just moved to Rhode Island.
Oh, very cool. Yeah, so. Yeah.
We could have just done the photo shoot up at your family compound.
Well, no one lives there anymore because my sister, well, we both went to NYU. She went first because, you know, she always sets the path, the standard.
The trend.
And then I went 4 years later. And then my brother-in-law, was it when Phil got a job with General Electric, you guys moved to Stanford?
Yep, we moved to Connecticut.
And so they were in Connecticut. I was in New York. And then my dad was basically like, I don't need to spend the rest of my life on 95 visiting you guys. So my parents bought a house near her.
Oh, okay, so that's why you said everyone's there.
Yes.
Got it. Got
it. Yes, so that's why I'm picking it up.
So you said everybody cooked. Tell me what your mom cooked.
Oh, my God. My mother makes so many amazing things. I mean, she definitely does kind of the traditional, I would say, what we call in New York, like the red sauce stuff, like meatballs, cutlets. I mean, you've never had better homemade pasta than my mom makes.
She makes it homemade?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Rolling it out, cutting it.
She does amazing. Like, what she does is, like, even if she's making fettuccine, for instance, like, talk about Nonna style. Like, she'll fold it and she'll cut it, like, scientifically with a knife, like, with such precision. And she makes what, I guess they're more like peachy, but we call them fusilli. And what she does is she clips the bottom of a wire hanger. And she just rolls them on the wire hanger. And it's like, I mean, my mother's amazing. The things that woman can make with her two hands.
But she's a very good cook.
But growing up, that was kind of the most of, like, the weeknight stuff, I would say, would be, like, the traditional Italian-American kind of things. And she also did, like, a lot of, because of where she grew up, a lot of, like, what we call minestras with, like, potatoes and beans and...
Yes.
Not a lot of meat, though. More veggies and pastas and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And what'd your dad make?
Nothing. I don't know what she's talking about.
No, what my dad would do...
He burned a flambé once that we still talk about.
Oh, my God. That was disgusting.
We had to try to eat it.
No, what my she was dad... The cook. What dad was really cool, fun about is that when we were little, like, before the Food Network came on the scene, like, we watched a ton of, like, PBS cooking shows.
We did. Jack and Julia.
Yeah, but remember there was like that guy Pasquale?
Yeah. No, my dad was very instrumental in the fact that, so my mom would cook, but it's not like it is today. Like, it was a task. It was a chore like the laundry. I need to cook. And my dad was the one that really said, you need to get the girls in the kitchen. You need to get them helping you. Like, we have pictures of us like posing with a lasagna or, you know, no, true pictures posing with a lasagna because we help make it. So I really credit him, actually, to getting us in the kitchen with her to learn from a young age how to cook. And now I feel my mom's pain because, like, I just want to get pancakes on the table, and I have three sous chefs.
She's so impatient with that stuff. It drives me crazy.
It's hard. It's hard because, like, you're trying, you know, you don't want to get burned or whatever. But
Dad always, like, if we wanted a cookbook or something, or we wanted to try a recipe, he would always lead that charge.
Yeah, we're a foodie family, 100%. Like, food was kind of made our world go around. It's why I ended up going to culinary school, which my dad is actually one that really pushed me, like, you need to do this.
But why my jeans are too tight.
But let me interrupt you for a second, because you had a whole corporate career before you went to culinary school.
Right. So I went to college. I majored in psych. I was in, you know, the village, loving life in New York. And then graduated with a psych degree, started going interviews, and was like, I need to eat. So none of this is going to work. So I just, on a lark, like, took some interviews. I got a job with an insurance company that paid enough that I could stay. And I kind of did that corporate thing. And then after my daughter's birth, my second daughter, I was like, I just can't do this anymore. I need to just regroup and figure out what to do with my life. And that's when I went to culinary school.
But you said I couldn't do this anymore because?
Because it was just, you know, I think when you don't follow your passion and you're doing something just for the money or just because you think it's, quote unquote, the right thing to do, eventually you're not happy, you know? And I tell this to a lot of my friends now that are at that point in their career where they're incredibly successful and they're just not fulfilled. And I always feel like I've become like this motivator of saying, what do you really love to do? Like, think about that and see how you can translate that into a career, because I'm the happiest I've ever been and I make no money. But, you know,
but we're all really
money's
well
not
fed.
Important. And everybody's really well fed. And I feel very professionally fulfilled. So I think that's kind of the trade-off sometimes, unfortunately.
So, Luciana, we will talk about real estate at some point, I promise.
It's not as delicious. But we can talk about food all you want.
But how did you come up with the idea for the website and the Nona project?
Okay, so it's really cheesy, but I always say it all began with a meatball. And it all began with a meatball because, as we said, my mom's a great cook, but she's a typical immigrant mom chef. Throw it in a pan. No one knows what I just did, and it's delicious.
And it's certainly not measured, ever.
Not measured. So, I mean, I went to culinary school. I started recipe testing for Martha Stewart in the test kitchen. Then I moved on to Food 52, first as a chef, then as a recipe tester. So it's like, that's all I'm doing all day. So why do I not know how to write my mom's recipes? So we started doing it as like a fun little practice of like, all right, let's get the meatball recipe down. Let's get this recipe down. So we did it. And then I sound like Oprah, but I kind of had an aha moment where one day I was like, all my friends are immigrants. I should do this with other people because this would be so fun.
Yeah, but you're forgetting a really important thing that was definitely key in our house growing up. Like, one of the things about my mom immigrating to the States, and definitely something that my dad totally supported, was my mom really held on to so many traditions and recipes and things that she grew up with eating around holidays. And those are still things to this day that, like, we eat at those meals.
Such as
Christmas Eve, for instance. Everyone's going to talk to you about the Feast of the Seven Fishes, but my mother makes this stuff called, I think the right Italian way to say it is mollica, which is basically breadcrumbs, but it's this walnut breadcrumb Parmigiano
mixture.
Baked mixture that you sprinkle on top of, like, the pasta. It's out of this world amazing. My husband really doesn't like it.
My white boy husband loves it.
I don't understand.
I didn't know Chris didn't like it.
Chris
it's really
doesn't
good.
Like it. It's really weird. He loves everything mommy makes,
Phil,
but that's something we try to keep
Phil
a secret.
Loves it.
But those are the things. So I think, like, we grew up with this like ingrained in us, like, you got to hold on to this stuff because it means a lot to keeping a family together.
Right. So exactly. Because food is love and culture and all that good stuff. So it's passing those on to our kids. So it was kind of like, I could do this for my friends, like almost like a little like service. I get to write down the recipe. I get to learn how to make authentic Greek pastizio and everybody wins. And I'm going to put it on my website and people are going to go to my website to learn these authentic recipes. So that's how the whole thing was born, because I sent out an email like on a lark, like, hey, anybody? And it was like this flood of people. When can you cook with my mom? I literally had like a planner and I started making like visits to like Long Island, Staten Island, Jersey. I mean, anyone that would take me. I flew to San Francisco to cook with my friend's Chinese mother. I mean, amazing trips. And it's funny that the sessions kind of always have the same routine, even though it's never discussed. I walk in, we say hi. It's like we've known each other forever. There's ingredients laid out. We cook, we talk, and then we eat. We share a meal. And it's their food. And I hear stories about their children and what those recipes represent to their family and why they're so important and why it's so important that now their grandchildren eat those dishes and understand those dishes.
And their immigration stories.
So that kind of happened by accident. When I cooked with the first woman, it was a Greek woman, actually, Nellie, out in Long Island, very close to my heart. I adore her. And I walked in, and she told me how she'd been up since 5 a.m. Like, I came, it was like a chef's kitchen. Like, everything is meased out, ready to go. And I'm writing everything down. And like, as we're talking, I'm like, so Nelly, why'd you come to the U.S.? It was just like, why? I don't even know why I asked her. And she just said, you know, look, this is where I came from. This was my life. And I just wanted better. I wanted a new life where my children could succeed and have a very prosperous upbringing. And they did. I mean, her son is wildly successful. Her daughter is wildly successful. And it's funny, most of these women I cook with have incredibly successful kids. So it's like American dream achieved. And I started taking, I actually came up with kind of a list of questions I wanted to ask each person. I'd ask these questions, all these amazing stories would come up, some sad, some happy, some tragic, some very amazing stories. And then I give what I call them, like, their day in the sun. I put them up on the website, their kids blast it on Facebook. They think that they're famous on my little blog.
They kind of are.
Exactly. And it's just, it's wonderful. And what's really cool is when, like, one kid's family makes a recipe from somebody else's family and they tell me about it. And it's very rewarding. And
you built this little United Nations of Food.
I did.
On your blog there. What year did you start this?
Beginning of 2015.
Wow. So you probably did not anticipate sort of the political turn your project would take.
I don't think anybody did.
And it's funny because a lot of people thought that's why I did it. So I did send Donald Trump a fruit basket. No, I'm just kidding. No, I wasn't expecting it to blow up the way it did. And it's funny. It took on this life. And now it's people are like, right on. You got to cook with my mom. So it definitely has a new like kind of force behind it, but my intentions remain the same. It's not political. I cook with people from all political spectrum, like from every, you know, just because someone comes from someplace else doesn't mean everyone's got their own opinion. It's not about that. And
but you've certainly shown how sad the food world would have been had we not had all this immigration to the country and all these people just bringing their traditions and their cultures and their food.
Yeah. I don't like the term melting pot because I don't think anybody melted. I think everybody came here and the way I say it is they stuck their spoon in the melting pot. They didn't mix. They cooked their food and they stayed true to themselves. And that's why when you walk down any street in Brooklyn, you can have Vietnamese and then you can have some Chinese and you can have a meatball. And that's why, because everyone held their ground. And I cooked with a Chinese woman who said something that will stick with me forever. She said, people think that the U.S. is a melting pot and I'm not so sure. I actually think that the U.S. is a stained glass window. We all came here. We got our little piece and we all shine together. And it was like, oh, but I love that because it's so true. And that's why I stopped saying melting pot.
Okay, we are just, that is so brilliant. We're just going to stop right here and go to break. And we will be right back with these two to talk a bit more.
Le Cordon Bleu, the renowned culinary school, was founded in Paris 122 years ago by a young journalist named Mademoiselle d'Estelle. In 1895, she launched the first weekly culinary magazine called La Cuisinière Le Cordon Bleu. She invited subscribers to take part in free cooking lessons with the chefs featured in her magazine, and from there, the school was born. In the years since, Le Cordon Bleu's world-class instructors have taught French classical culinary techniques to everyone from home enthusiasts to food world legends. If you've dreamt of attending culinary school, maybe it's time to quit that boring corporate job and check out one of Le Cordon Bleu's 35 locations around the world, or add a short workshop or weekend program at one of its schools to your next vacation. Visit cordonbleu.edu for course descriptions, dates, and online registration. It's all possible at Le Cordon Bleu.
Hi, everybody. You're listening to Radio Cherry Bomb, and we are here with Anna Francis Goss and Luciana Francis Ducrosta, and they are two wonderful sisters doing just really interesting things. Anna is the force behind Anna's Heirloom Kitchen, and Luciana is a real estate developer who's working on a really exciting project here in Brooklyn. And I think we could talk about all the grandmothers like all day long. You're going to have to come back at some point. Absolutely. But I want to talk about real estate. I want to talk about the City Point project. You are doing so many big, big things. And when I met you, I was like, oh my God, you're like a baby. And you're in charge of this giant shopping complex with a Target and a Trader Joe's and the whole DeKalb market. And how did you, with this interesting family and food background, how did you wind up in real estate?
Because I guess the other part of being a part of an immigrant immigrant family is kind of like ultimate hustle. And another thing that my parents did together was they ran like rental property. So my mom and dad bought a house when we were little, and we lived on the ground floor, and together they chopped up the second and third floors, and you know, they rented apartments. And you know, it was like a lesson in property, like an unconscious lesson in like building in property management. So when I was in school, my dad was like, well, what do you like? And we sat down kind of with a list of everything NYU's College of Arts and Sciences offered. And I was like, you know, Dad, I was like, I really like building and architecture. And that's kind of how it started. And then I graduated early and blindly applied to a job in real estate development. I was like, all right, like the starting salary is great. I'll do it for a while. Maybe I'll go back to school. I had no idea. And then I just got into it and I loved it. I loved it. I loved the whole aspect of placemaking, finding a community that needed something and providing it.
You studied urban design also, right?
I did. I studied journalism, and then I studied urban planning. Urban architecture studies and urban planning. I think that was my major. It was like 15 years ago. It was more than 15 years ago. Yeah, 15 years ago.
We forgive you for not remembering.
Yeah.
It's because she's getting old.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, so that's how I got into it. And then it's just been, you know.
Or mom brain. She still does have a 15-month-old.
I
that's
do.
Not easy.
I do. But I hate saying that because it feels like my husband can get away with murder.
Do you guys watch Odd Mom Out?
I love that show.
I love that show, too. There was the funny thing where the dad does one thing and they had a parade for the dad. Did you see that episode?
Oh, my God. I know. She's hysterical.
She is. I'd love to have her on the show.
You definitely need to. She's amazing.
So anyway, we digress. Real estate.
Yes.
So you're in the city to do real estate. That's for sure.
I'm in the city to do real estate. And kind of stumbled into Brooklyn, to be honest with you. I started out on Long Island, like building strip centers and in an outlet mall, and kind of like,
I think love brought you to Brooklyn.
Love did bring me to Brooklyn. I'll get there. So anyway, then I started doing, you know, some real estate in the city. And then I met my husband, my lovely, lovely husband. And we were on our first date at Emilio Bellotto's on Houston Street. And he said to me, and I'll never forget, he's like, I'm falling in love with you, but I need to know if you'll move to Brooklyn.
Oh, Luciana, that's so funny.
But I swear to God, and my husband, you know, he's in real estate too, but he was a poetry major, so that is what he said to me. And
Your dad must have approved, because he was a literary professor,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, but he has tattoos, so it was kind of a bumpy start.
You know, it's a give and a take.
It is a give and a take. So, so then, you know, I ended up working for a little while for Forest City Ratner, the group that, you know, built the Barclays Center and Atlantic Center. And then, interestingly enough, some old colleagues and other connections were like, you know, we have City Point and you know Brooklyn so well. At that point, I had been in Brooklyn, you know, six years-ish. And I was like, yeah, like this is amazing, you know, especially after the market crashed and, you know, 2008 to 2011 were really not a great time for what I do. It was nice to find like a hole in the ground and people building. It was a nice sign of the times. And so the great thing about Brooklyn is, It's you know, the third largest city in the world, and still, despite all the culture and everything we have, there's still stuff people need. And that's what I work on every day.
I know you think it's the third largest in the world, but I think it might
be. I mean,
be
the country.
In the
country.
That just shows how much she loves Brooklyn. It's heartwarming.
I do love Brooklyn very much.
So when I met you at this space, it's huge. It's huge. And you're just marching around like it's all totally fine. Giant projects like that don't scramble your brain, obviously.
They don't. You know, and look, I work with a really amazing team. You know, I have a colleague, Aaron. He's amazing. We kind of tackle it together. And Anna Castellani, who you know, curated the Market Hall, and she's our partner. And then I work with this other guy, Paul Travis, who pretty much built downtown Brooklyn. And, you know, the people at Acadia are really visionaries in a lot of ways. So it's great just working with all these really smart people that all love Brooklyn in their own way. And, you know, we really rolled up our sleeves to put something pretty special together.
So I should say at this point, I have a little place at the DeKalb Market within City Point. My boyfriend and I have Wilma Jean down there. And the market's incredible. There's so many great people and brands down there. But I want to talk about this whole market trend.
Yeah.
Because it's really swept the country from mm-hmm. Grand Central Market in Los Angeles to all the different markets in Manhattan and now DeKalb. What's behind this trend?
Well, I think it's a bigger thing than just market halls. You know, look, I mean, I think the scary thing in what I do, especially being in retail, what everybody talks about is stores are dead and people aren't shopping. And to an extent, that's true. But the one thing that Amazon or any sort of, you know, and I don't want to knock on Amazon, but, you know, basically what e-retailing and e-experience can never replace is actual human experience. You're a person who wants to do something, meet up with a friend, get something to eat, touch and feel something. You can't do that on your computer. You know, so with the market hall, what I guess the inspiration behind that, especially in downtown Brooklyn, where definitely could use some more food users and in concepts, you know, it was like people need a place to go. And what a better way to bring them together than eating, you know? And what Anna did that was truly amazing is she really, you know, pounded the pavement to find the gems of each neighborhood in New York, you know, the Wilma Jeans. And, you know, we have this one woman from Brooklyn who does cake pops, and she's a sole kind of proprietor. And they're, for the most part, all sole proprietors. And she kind of picked the best and the best of, like, the hole-in-the-wall food, like pierogi boys. You know, those pierogies are amazing. And some people, like, we have a cheese vendor. It's, like, her first kind of step into brick and mortar. She just really loves cheese. So she did a really good job kind of mixing up the typical roster. But, again, and I would say in the country, it is to just get people out of the house and together.
IRL. In real life.
Yes.
Is that Bell Cheese?
Yes.
That you're talking about?
Yes.
Yeah, so many great people down there. If you find yourself in Brooklyn or you're visiting the city, you should definitely go down there. I was curious, you know, from, because we do have a lot of entrepreneurs who listen to the show, and mm-hmm. that leap from having a business to having a brick and mortar is such a giant leap.
Yeah.
What, do you have any advice for people who are looking to maybe take their business from either a blog or something they're doing in their own home to doing it in an actual store?
I think it's about, well, look, I can tell you what we provided. You know, so in the market hall and even on the ground floor at City Point, you know, we wanted to create a really safe space for entrepreneurs. We live in this age of content and fresh content and needing different content. And the only way to do that is to really help people open their dream. So, you know, we basically structured everything so that it wasn't so risky. So what I would say is, you know, talk to people, find kind of, if it is brick and mortar that you're looking to take a step into, kind of find those landlords that you can trust. And I think the best way to do that is obviously talking to people, and taking kind of that educated leap, you know, into mm-hmm. something like that.
And market's a great way to test the waters, you know, and some of them are fantastic. It's not like they're as hot as restaurants these days. Mm-hmm. You know, you think of Grand Central and our friends, Sarah and Sarah, who have Mad Capra out there, this fantastic falafel place. Another good friend of ours, Crystal, has a business called Black Sugar at a place in Baltimore called Our House. It's mm-hmm. another type of market.
Yeah.
And, you know, because you are taking a chance when you sign a lease on your own location.
Right.
Where you're responsible for absolutely everything. So...
Yeah, but look, I think if you're working with a landlord that you'll want to be working with, like I think my key statement is your success is our success. And I don't think anybody holding your feet to the fire, I mean, that's just not a good relationship on both sides. So we try at City Point, you know, like I said, whether it's the food or, you know, our ground floor tenants, because we are trying to curate more pop-ups and short-term tenants and people with more interesting, you know, stuff that they're selling. We just try to make it like mutually beneficial. Like, we want you this to work. We're going to support you every way that we can. And if for some reason you feel like you're not doing well or you're not getting the sales or the traffic, like, we will respectfully shake hands and walk away.
Mm-hmm. What she's not saying, though, is that she does a great job about getting people in the door. Because I think the biggest jump for anybody, I mean, I know this just as a blogger that wanted a cookbook, is the first thing they say is, who are you and what's your platform? Because today it's everybody needs their own platform. No one's going to hand you anything. You have to have a built-in audience. And I think that's for food, for pretty much anything. So when you're making that leap, you have to know that you're going to have people come. But what Luciana does that's so great is that she's like, okay, what event can we get at City Point that gets people in the door and gets people walking around? And she's always getting bodies in the building. And I think that's what makes her such a great landlord, because it takes a little bit of the pressure mm-hmm. off, because you're helping people
go to the cheese place or go to Proby Boys. It's street cred, too. I mean, it's all about who you align yourself with, right? And so if you open a store, like, that's great. Or you open a stall at the market hall, wonderful. But you need support, you know, from the landlord to say, okay, like, here's our market. Here's who we're serving. You can't, it's not just let's open the doors and people are going to come in anymore.
What's
you need
the event
experience.
You did that we went to that was so fun with the kids? What was that?
Oh, Kids Fest.
So fun.
Yeah, we partnered with Free Arts, which is an amazing organization. And they do Kids Fest, which is so cool, where they get, you know, artists to come in and do these interactive activities, you know, with kids. And what's great is that it's something for moms to do with their kids. And those moms are our shoppers. So it's a win-win for everybody.
You're not getting that on Amazon.
You are not.
We are talking about doing something together next year. And hopefully...
We are.
I know we'll wind up doing something next year. What it winds up being, neither of us know yet,
well,
but we will.
Space I have, so whatever you'd like to do.
You do have. You are space rich. That is 100% true. Mm-hmm. Are we allowed to talk about your book?
Yes.
What can we say?
That I have this compilation of grandma recipes. Very exciting. HarperCollins is publishing it as a compilation cookbook due out May 2019.
Great. Oh,
for good. Mother's Day.
Yay. We love a compilation cookbook. Our compilation cookbook comes out 10/10. Got to drop that. You have a nice chunk of time to work on it, which is great.
I do. That's one thing. You know, the cookbook process is really funny because you just kind of don't know what you're going into until you go into it. And I was immediately drawn to HarperCollins because I just felt like they really got it. And they realized that this needed... time and a commitment. And I actually walked in with 75 completed recipes, but I said, I want more. And I want to represent as many countries in this book as I can. My editor is always like, stop having sessions, just write. But I'm like, okay, just one more session. Because I met a Dominican woman and I have to cook with her because I need to know how to make sancocho. And she's like, okay, then you're going to start. So no, but it's really great because they're really excited. They really get it. And I felt like everything I said about how I want this book to feel and to look and what I want it to elicit from the buyer, they got. And they said, yes, we love it.
Are you doing everything yourself? Or are you hiring a props person, a food stylist, all of that?
So I am currently negotiating with a very amazing photographer. Who also really gets it. But I call him the Disney package, and I've said this to his face, so it's okay that I say this, because he has a talented wife and a lot of props. So they kind of handle all that, and they have their own studio. And then I'm bringing a very close, dear friend of mine to do styling. And then I'll be in the kitchen probably with one other person cooking and getting it all together.
Well, it sounds like a lot of fun.
It is.
Now, Luciana, I get the distinct impression that you and your sister are going to do a project together one day.
I hope so.
Well, she's been my Nona broker. Like, she's gotten me at least 5 or 6 Nonas. And
Broker is like the best title on the planet.
No, this is like a family mission.
My dad has gotten me a couple.
And my husband is like so committed to this too. Like, this has become like, I don't know, like a passion project for the whole family.
Yeah.
But between me and Chris, we have gotten you some pretty good Nonas.
Yeah, my husband was in an Uber the other day and texted me like, "Do you have Romania?" And I'm like, "No, why?" He's like, "My driver's Romanian, his mom's a good cook. She lives in Bridgeport. What do you want me to do?"
Well,
I'm like,
so
hook it up.
I mean, you must be tempted, and everybody who knows you must be so tempted to just be like grabbing grandma's left and right for you.
The thing is, it's a lot to ask. You know, and I say that when I talk to people. I'm like, I'm going to come into your house, and you're going to cook for me, and it's going to be like 3 to 4 hours. Will you do it? And everybody says yes.
You know what, though? I totally get where you're coming from, because I always feel bad about asking people to do things for Cherry Bomb, and everyone's like, it's not that big an ask. Don't worry.
Yeah.
And I feel the same thing with your project. I'm like, who wouldn't want to do that? I mean, everybody... Yeah. What's your tagline? Everybody has a Nona?
Everybody has a Nona. And my other tagline is everybody loves their Nona. Because when you go to your Nona's house, she loves you. I mean, my son, my 4-year-old said this to me. She's like, "Mommy, I love you very much. I just want to tell you one thing." And I said, "What?" He's like, "Nani's just a little bit nicer than you are."
She is.
And I said...
Thanks, Steve. Well, not to end on this note, but my grandmother was the worst cook. And my great-grandmother was not a great cook.
But did you love them?
I did love them. Of course I did.
So my second tattling works.
But my grandmother did take me out all the time for... butterscotch sundaes.
Mm. See, so you still have
food
memory.
That is
still
my
have
food,
a food memory.
Weird butterscotch. Nobody likes. Well, kids don't even know what butterscotch is anymore, do they?
Yeah, but butterscotch sundaes.
But she liked it,
good.
And she got you to eat it.
Exactly.
Keene Steakhouse has a good butterscotch sundae.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Oh, good to know. Before I let you go, when I was going through your blog, and there are so many amazing recipes on there. So I just
Thank
want
you.
People to know that they can actually go on there and find these recipes.
Yes.
Want to throw out a few that you love?
Yes. The pork adobo is pretty amazing. Filipinos usually make adobo with chicken. Sometimes they'll make it with pork, but they use pork belly. But this woman, Magda, actually makes it with pork ribs, and she has her butcher cut them in half. So like they're little riblets, and you just like can't stop eating them. And that's really good. And it's like a one pot wonder. Oh my God. It's like my kids. I love them all the same. What do I say here? My mom's meatballs. Try my mother's meatballs.
Oh, that's a good place to start.
Nelly's Spanakopita
is to die for. And I've had many people make that. It's a very classic Greek dish. You can never have it at any diner, but Nelly's is the best.
We'll tweet out the mom's meatball one, because I feel like that's a good gateway drug to all your recipes.
And then, all the pictures of everything is also up on my Instagram, @AnnaFGoss. Check it out and click, 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 and you can find what you like.
Fantastic. It's been such a treat having you two on the show.
Thank you. You'll
absolutely have to come back. I feel like you two should have your own show.
Well, host and then co-host.
Well, have fun at the photo shoot. Thanks for slapping on the false eyelashes for us. We appreciate that.
I am batting them right now.
All right, you two. Have a great afternoon.
Thank you.
Thanks, as always, to our engineer, Dave Tatasciore, and a big thank you to Le Cordon Bleu. Be sure to visit cordonbleu.edu for information about this legendary culinary school. Don't forget, come see us on the Cherry Bomb Cookbook Tour. We will be in Pittsburgh, Philly, Boston, and Charleston in the days and weeks ahead. You can get all the information at cherrybomb.com. If you don't happen to be in one of those cities, you could pick up the cookbook anyway. It's 100 recipes from 100 of the most interesting women in the food world. We hope you love the book as much as we do and enjoy cooking from it and find a favorite recipe or 2 or 3 or 4, whatever. All right, everybody, that's it for our show. Thanks for listening. You're the bomb.
technical shots, and I'm an illustrator. Radio Cherry Bomb is a joint production of Cherry Bomb Magazine and the Heritage Radio Network. To subscribe or learn more about the magazine, visit cherrybomb.com. You know who I think is the bomb? Sarah from Sarah's Vegan Kitchen. She's super cool and super creative, and you should definitely check her out on YouTube.